Well, I talked about the broadcast partners. Here's number one for us today, Ken Timmerman. And Ken is in Washington, D.C. area. What a vantage point to look at the entire world. Ken, what I want to start out with is what happened in New York City at the United Nations General Assembly earlier this week. President Obama of the United States, President Rouhani of Iran, they both spoke at the United Nations General Assembly. First of all, give me your observations about both of these men and what they had to say, and then I'll get maybe into some more particular questions.
The Rouhani essentially reiterated the positions of the Iranian regime that they intend to continue the pursuit of nuclear technologies. He claims, of course, that it's civilian technologies, and that they're certainly willing to talk about that with the West, but they are willing to talk with the West about that on their terms, in ways that allow them to keep that technology. Now, Obama, who should know better, because this has happened before, it's happened with two previous Iranian presidents, Rafsanjani and Khatami, who pretended to be moderates, Obama says, wow, let's take this opportunity and see if we can make a deal, and hopefully the Iranian threat will go away. I think this is incredibly short-sighted, and it's dangerous, because we will essentially legitimize the Iranian nuclear weapons program and do nothing to curtail it.
Well, and Rouhani, Ken, seemingly has got his charm offensive in full power, and the president of the United States seems to be buying into this and moving closer to some kind of a relationship with the Iranian leadership, which indeed has not been the case for about three decades. In fact, it was interesting to see Obama was ready to meet and shake hands and maybe even have a conversation. Rouhani backed out of that.
Yeah, isn't that curious? It's a bit indicative of the type of relationship we can expect with the Islamic Republic of Iran, where the slightest mention of diplomatic relations with the United States, the great Satan, sends shivers down the spines of the Ayatollahs. And the Revolutionary Guards, I might add, they are not prepared for the United States to open an embassy in Iran. They are not prepared for direct, high-level diplomatic talks with the United States. They want to do this on their own terms, which makes them appear to have defeated the great Satan. And that's why I think this is extremely damaging overture for the president, because they're going to run circles around us diplomatically. They're going to run circles around us in the public diplomacy, in other words, in the way that they describe these talks, and we're going to look foolish and weak, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, and the Israeli government watching this very closely. Just give me a quick comment. What do you think about Israel watching this at all unfold?
I've become, unfortunately, increasingly convinced that the only real resolution, the only way of preventing now the Islamic Republic of Iran from going nuclear will be some kind of Israeli military strike. I think that's a shame. I think that's not necessary. But that's the only solution that the Obama administration is leaving on the table.
Ken, this last week, the focus has been much on Nairobi, Kenya, and the shopping mall there, Al-Shabaab, attacking, destroying much of the building, the mall itself, which has caused many deaths. And the Somali president saying that Al-Shabaab could well attack the United States in a like manner. This is quite threatening.
One of the things we found out about Al-Shabaab is that they are very well infiltrated into the United States. There's a large Somali community in Tennessee. There's another one in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And it appears that some of the terrorists who attacked the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi had, in fact, come from the United States and may have either had U.S. citizenship or green cards. So they certainly are present in this country. Whether or not they're planning to attack is something else, but they certainly are present. They have the resources, and then it's a question of their intentions.
Let's go out to the Middle East just briefly. Islamic Syrian rebels are breaking away from the Western-backed opposition group. They say they're not going to participate. They're going to form their own community, their own force to try to take down Bashar Assad. This doesn't sound good.
Well, again, the Committee of 13 Islamist groups includes al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda-affiliated Islamic terrorist group in Syria, and a number of others, and they're trying to break away from the Free Syrian Army, which In a way, Jimmy, this could be good news in the sense that it clarifies the situation. The U.S. has been in a quandary with the Free Syrian Army for quite some time because General Idris appeared to be in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood was cooperating with the Nusra Front, and so the risk was that we would be arming al-Qaeda. Now it appears that these al-Qaeda groups and al-Qaeda-affiliated groups are splitting off from the Free Syrian Army, and you and I had had a conversation over the summer when the Nusra Front assassinated one of the top leaders of the Free Syrian Army at a checkpoint. And this appears to be a follow-on to that event. They said at the time they would declare war on the Free Syrian Army. Well, this seems to be the political side of that, where they're now forming the political alliance to completely split themselves off from the Free Syrian Army. In a ironic way, this could make it easier for the United States to arm and equip the forces of General Idris.
But could it not also give Assad's military forces better opportunity as well? When you have the opposition split, then that gives you an upper hand, does it not?
Well, yes and no. The Nusra Front has been the best equipped and the best trained so far on the ground. And because the U.S. has not been helping General Idris until recently, he's not had the resources to be handing out to his own fighters. And he's been plagued with desertions and depletions of his ranks. So, you know, Assad has been winning over the past 8 months, in part because of this. I think this is a significant event. The Nusra Front is now clearly taking itself outside of the Free Syrian Army and that coalition. What remains to be seen is if the Free Syrian Army will, in fact, define itself as a secular, pro-Western coalition of freedom fighters, or whether they will keep the Muslim Brotherhood and some of the Nusra Front allies under their wing.
Meanwhile, Bashar Assad making his statement that he could blind Israel in an instant. I'm not sure exactly what that headline means. Seems like he's a bit braggadocious about what he's capable of doing, even if they have to take out their chemical weapons of mass destruction.
Well, I think you're probably right about that, Jimmy. Assad is trying to make everyone believe that he's got plenty of other military resources if he gives up the chemical weapons in his arsenal. He's got other things that he could use against Israel. You know, he has been trying to purchase S-300 air defense missiles from Russia for quite some time. The Russians claim that they have stopped those deliveries, but, you know, we don't know, and we won't know until, you know, you see them on the ground or they're used. But those are missiles that could, in fact, I won't say blind the Israeli Air Force, but they could certainly be a great problem for any Israeli attack, such as the one that took out Syria's nuclear reactor in 2007.
Ken, a major church bombing in Pakistan, which is seemingly only the tip of the iceberg, because Islamic terror groups all across the Middle East and around the world, in fact, are going after, they're targeting Christians, aren't they?
They are, and this has been going on, alas, for quite some time. This latest church bombing in Pakistan was quite bloody. Over 80 worshippers were murdered. It took place in the city of Peshawar, which is the gateway to Afghanistan. And quite I've been to Peshawar, and it's the home of al-Qaeda. It's the home of the most radical of the Islamist groups, and had been home to close to 2 million Afghan refugees from the war in Afghanistan over the years. But Christians are being attacked, churches are being attacked, not just in Pakistan, but in Egypt. Over 80 churches have been destroyed by the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And good news on that front, Jimmy, is that the interim military leader, General al-Sisi, in Egypt, has pledged publicly that he will rebuild the churches that have been destroyed in Egypt by the Muslim Brotherhood. So things have begun to turn around in Egypt. You have at least the commitment of the interim leader to guaranteeing the freedom of worship of Christians in Egypt. Now, he's got to enforce that and make sure that the Muslim Brotherhood can't continue their attacks. But the will seems to be there, and that's a very big, it's a very significant development.
Yes, some good news in what is a bad story and somewhat not covered. The fact Christians being persecuted, martyred, killed, churches burned all across the Middle East, and now they're claiming they're going to move to the entire world. with those same type of activities. Ken Timmerman covering the geopolitical activities for us right here on Prophecy Today brings so much to the table that's so essential for our understanding. Ken, thank you so much, my good buddy. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jimmy. God bless.